Welcome to Hey Ghost Hey, the podcast about ghosts, ghost hunting, and other paranormal phenomena of the Pacific Northwest. I am your host, Charles Crooks, owner, tour guide, and psychic of Bellingham Ghost Tours. We are here because I like ghosts a lot. Now let's begin. Well, hello again, my friends. Welcome to the second season of Hey Ghost Hey. I'm very excited to be here, of course. I mean, I'm always happy to be here, especially to talk about ghosts. But we are also in the middle of a very busy Halloween season for me. This is probably my biggest one that I've planned yet. It's the third season for the tours. And besides the Fairhaven tour, the downtown tour, I also started a brand new tour that was really purely just a passion project, and that was the Practical Ghost Tour, called that because it was down in Coopville, Washington, and that is the home of Practical Magic, the movie, where all the town scenes were filmed. So I show everyone the locations of where the movie used all the famous town parts, like Sally's Shop, for example, and to talk about some of the ghost stories of Whidbey Island. So it's my very first tour outside of Bellingham, and it's been a lot of fun to just talk about something that I love in a completely different place. So hopefully that one's going to come back around again. Not exactly quite sure when, maybe a day in February, we'll see. But also, we're going to wrap up this Halloween season with a big ghost hunt in the Manresa Castle out in Port Townsend. This is something that I've wanted to do for quite a while now, has been on my list, so I'm super excited that we're going to go out there, and it's probably going to be featured as the season finale of this season, so hopefully, of course, we'll find stuff, but you never know. The ghosts don't always show up on command. So, all right, we're going to jump right in to our first episode here. And I thought it very appropriate to actually go back to where we wrapped up the last season. So the first season wrapped up at what I called the Whidbey Island House. And I thought it would be nice to start this season off with that exact same location. So if you listened to last season, I do not give the exact location of where the home is, other than saying it is kind of in the Coopville and Fort Casey areas out on Whidbey Island. So recently it has been sold to new ownership, and they necessarily don't want it to be known that the location is haunted. So that is why I respectfully keep it quiet on the podcast as I talk about it on this more public space. But I will say, if you happen to go on the Practical Ghost Tour, I do talk about this home on the tour and exactly where it is. So if you want to find where it is exactly, you've got to go on that tour for the specific details. So to start us off, of course, I'm going to kind of start like we would in the previous season and start with the history of the place that we are focusing on before we get into the investigation and any evidence found. Last season, when I talked about the area, I believe I focused on the Fort Casey aspect. So for this episode, I figured that we would focus on the town of Coopville itself and the history surrounding that area. So as usual, I am just going to read something that I found from online. For this, we have Coopville's history from historylink.org, and here we go. Coopville is one of Washington's oldest towns and the seat of Island County. Situated on Whidbey Island at Penn Cove on Saratoga Passage, the town was once the site of three permanent Lower Skagit tribal villages. Named for pioneer Thomas Coop, it was settled by sea captains and farmers in the 1850s. Whidbey Island narrows near Coopville, nearby Eby's Landing and Eby's Prairie share a common history. The activation of Fort Casey in 1901 spurred efforts for Coopville incorporation in April 1910. During the Great Depression, Whidbey Island utilized government funds for building projects such as Deception Pass Bridge in 1935. Many of Coopville's older structures survived into the 1970s, and Whidbey Island's support for the arts and tourism gave impetus to formation of Eby's Landing National Historic Reserve, the first of its kind recognized in the U.S. Continued support of tourism has preserved four blockhouses, historic buildings and homes, and most significant, the prairie itself. Gift shops, restaurants, businesses, and boutiques and heritage buildings now line Coopville's Front Street, and the Island County Historical Museum on Main Street interprets Whidbey Island's past. So, of course, even as this article mentions, it very briefly notes the native history of this area. While the actual colonized history is so new compared to even the rest of the U.S. or the rest of the world. And so I just always remind you that we often think of haunted history in relationship to colonized history, but we have such potential for things that have been here for so much longer, people that have been here for so much longer. So just always keep in mind that when we go into looking for these things, we often tend to automatically go to that colonized version of history and what can be left behind, but there's so many possibilities that exist beyond that. So last time when I investigated the house, I did two nights with two different teams, but this time I did a little bit different. I decided to do one night solo to see what would happen, and then I did a second night with a very small team inside the house. So for the first night when I was solo, I have to say that it was such an extremely quiet night. I had zero responses, I think, on the flux responder, and that's one of the devices that was popping off last time we were in the basement, the night of the stormy full moon. And that's when we got all the responses that seemed like they were directly in relation to asking of the questions, asking if something was there with us. We constantly got a yes response for a good 5 to 10 minutes, I want to say, or maybe even a little bit longer. But this time, when I was by myself, I got absolutely nothing on the flux responder, and I had that device on for hours. I also had the ovulus going, and so if you forget, the ovulus is the device, it's very popular on all the ghost shows right now, where it can supposedly pick up small fluctuations in the atmosphere, and then spirits can use those differences, I guess, to translate things into words so they can speak with us. So, of course, I've always wondered, how do spirits even know what fluctuations need to be made or how to even get the right word? So I've always been kind of skeptical about the device until actually this summer. I did a investigation with the Good Time Girls, and so I will be talking about that whole story later on for another episode. But it really made me rethink the possibilities of what can come through that device. However, I will say most of the time when I do use it, I think it just kind of spits out gibberish, and it's really hard to really pin down anything unless you have words that are very specific to a history that is known. And I did not really get anything that I felt was super relevant on that first night. So I'm not going to lie, that was pretty disappointing. But also, I will say it is interesting that I have found that when I often go out to investigate by myself, I very rarely get any sort of activity or any sort of evidence. I often get things when I go on investigations with other people. Now, I don't know if that has something to do with the collective energy of everyone being together, or if that kind of amplifies things and makes it easier to collect stuff. I don't know, but it's a little disappointing to have so much quiet when you're by yourself. So I guess also at the same time, maybe a little reassuring, as that can be unnerving too if you're alone and you have stuff popping off. During the first night, the only activity that I did have, or I guess I could say I kind of experienced, was I used the ovulus and changed it to a different setting. So a lot of people know it as the device that can spit out words, but there's all sorts of other different settings that you can tune it to, and one of them is a geoscope. So basically what the geoscope does is that it will pick up any sort of vibration picked up through the floor. If it's on a table, it can pick up vibrations on the table, or even still pick up like footsteps walking around on the floor. It's very, very sensitive. And so when I was sitting in the family room of the home, I set the ovulus in geoscope mode on a rocking chair that was very, very still, and I tested the motion around it to see like what footsteps would be picked up. If I moved around on the couch, would that be picked up by my movement? And so tested the various ways and sat for a while. And after I realized what it could or could not pick up from me, I did notice that there were very slight vibrations that were coming through from the rocking chair. Now, I did not see any movement from the rocking chair, so it did not physically look like it was moving. But the device did say that there were very slight hits of sensitivity, I guess, that it picked up, which was interesting. So the very next day, I was just sitting at the table in the kitchen having dinner and scrolling through my phone, and I think I had some music playing through there as well, but just kind of zoning out and giving myself time before the investigation that night started. And I heard what sounded like almost as if someone had taken a handful of gravel and kind of scattered it around the walls, and you hear like a trickle of the pebbles falling. So at first I wasn't quite sure what I even heard. I got up and I looked to see maybe had someone driven up, because it almost kind of sounded like a car on gravel as well. And I didn't see anyone, and I couldn't necessarily pinpoint the noise. I paused my music, I listened further, and still didn't hear anything. But a minute later, I heard kind of more of a rumble through the wall, which then progressed to what sounded like very heavy footsteps on the floor above me. Now, at this point, I had never, ever encountered any sort of activity like this before in this home. So I'm not going to lie, my heart starts racing and I really start to freak myself out. And so along with these heavy footstep noises, it also sounds like someone was rolling around a very heavy metal ball on the floor up above me. And so instead, of course, going up to check to see what's going on upstairs, I freak out. I call one of my friends and she starts to bring me back to reality. And after listening for a few more minutes, I realize that there's scratching in the walls around me, and that it's most likely just squirrels. And so around sunset, they had rushed inside the home. And during this big rush, you could basically sound like the home had something tearing through it. It is really incredible. I guess if you've never heard the sound of rodents and walls before, it can very, very much sound like something else. And it was a very good reality check for me that even though I know that there's all sorts of natural explanation to things, that we can still freak ourselves out. And so, again, not everything is a ghost as much as I wish for things to be ghostly. It just simply is not. So I had to accept the hard fact that I got terrified by squirrels in the walls. Alrighty, on to the investigation for night two then. So for this, I had a very small team of three people that were with me by the names of Alex, Nancy, and Mary. And for this, I'm actually going to start up on the second floor, work our way down to the first floor, and then down to the basement, which I find still to be the most active space of the house. still to this day. So starting with the second floor, we primarily had a lot of activity that was similar to the first time, or I'm sorry, to the last time that I was there, especially in regards to the ovulus. So now we have had all sorts of words come through that seem to have connotation to religion, to seem to have connotation to something bad happening, and then also to students or to children. And so those themes very much continue during this investigation. And let's find some of the exact word threads that came up. And now these words were in a row for the most part, instead of being kind of spaced out amongst other words. So I would say these were some of the most interesting threads that I heard in our time there. So for the first chunk, we have threat heavy students found. And then it went on to say alone, angry, reveal, followed by sacrifice, preacher, release, island, especially students. And the last kind of coherent chunk that we got was unholy, unlock, constant, linger. And so we've never really had any sort of, I guess, rhyme or reason as to why these were coming up other than speculating on our own. But it is very interesting that we have had this continuous theme through multiple investigations now. So I very much do think that there is something to at least the energy and kind of theme of these words that are coming through on what seems to be a semi-regular basis. In relation to all of these words, I think that Nancy proposed one of the more interesting possibilities that we hadn't necessarily evaluated yet, or possibly really thought of or looked at, and that is the possibility of Native children being forced into other religions, as all those words definitely seem to fit that vibe of possibility. Of course, this is 100% just speculation on our own, as I'm not even sure of the exact historical implications of what that looked like for the island, but it definitely is an interesting possibility to consider. Okay, next up, we are traveling down to the first floor of the home. Now, traditionally, I have found that the first floor seems to be the most quiet of the home, where definitely the basement is the most active. And we seem to get, even though while the second floor is rather quiet too, we definitely seem to get those consistent responses that are coming through the ITC devices like the Ovilus and any other kind of phone apps. One of my favorite phone apps that I have used, and I think I've talked about this before, but I believe there are so many apps that I am very, very skeptical of, especially the phone apps compared to the actual devices themselves, just because they are programmed primarily for entertainment. And a lot of the word banks that the Ovilus style apps will use are specifically made for haunting atmospheres. There are so many out there that I even think will listen to you and can spit out words in regurgitation to what it's possibly hearing, or what you've even looked up. Like so many other apps can track your conversations or even what you've previously searched. So, and I think there are some ghost hunting apps that do the exact same thing to either kind of regurgitate what is relevant to what is going on, or just really kind of spits out words that are relevant to ghosts specifically. However, I have found the most luck with the app called, it's simply called Ghost, all in caps, and it's also known as the Paranormal Science Toolkit. And I don't know if it's available on Android at all. I know for sure for iPhone, as that's what I have. But I have found this to be the absolute best app, and what I believe so far to at least be the most genuine app that I've used so far. One of the features that I really like about this app is that it has an SLS scanner. And so basically SLS devices, we saw their rise come to be in, the earlier days of ghost hunting, where people realized that the Xbox Kinect camera, which is made to sense movement, can supposedly pick up the movements of things that are unseen in the room as well, like a ghost. And so it would map those movements out with a green stick figure. So when it identifies human shape, it attaches that stick figure to it, just like it would for a normal person who would be moving around. And so with this app, I have used the SLS part many, many times and on many different investigations. And now I have never had one single hit that made me even question of something possibly even existing there. There are very, very few times where I found very obvious false positives, like, for example, on a chandelier. Like, it can pick up the candle extensions or the light extensions and attach almost like a human-like shape to that. So obviously a very false positive. Now, had I been getting all sorts of stick figures in using this app just in all the spaces around me, I probably would be very skeptical about it because I really don't know if it is picking things up or if it's just literally throwing in a stick figure and being another entertainment app. But I have found that it would not give false positives at all unless it was connecting to a very real physical thing, like the candelabra, for example, or I'm sorry, chandelier. Or even like stair banisters, it can pick up and kind of identify anything that's long and tall with human shape. It will pick up and identify as a human, but those things are very easy to identify when it has a false positive. So by not having random stick figures show up, I honestly feel like I can trust this app a whole lot more than others. So the whole point of all that is to say that we were taking a break, just sitting around the table in the kitchen, and Alex downloaded this app for himself, and he pointed it in one of the corners of the kitchen, and near the microwave, it picked up a stick figure. And so he called it out to the whole group, let us know what he saw, and I pulled it up on my phone, and sure enough, in that exact same area, it picked up the stick figure as well. Now, what's interesting is that, again, if it would be a false positive, you would see consistency with it picking up that same shape, and this was not consistent when we scan that area. I even moved the camera back and forth just to see if maybe it would catch movement differently, and that did not happen. So I genuinely think that it was really picking up on a shape that we could not see with our eyes. And then after it shifted from the corner in the kitchen over to another doorway where it was picked up again and again, Alex and myself both saw it on our apps. So to have both devices pick up this same figure in the exact same areas without any obviously discernible object to give a false reading was extremely interesting, and we were pretty excited because, like I said, this was my very first time that I'd ever seen any sort of actual positive with this app on or using it for ghost hunting purposes or using it for the SLS. So I was really excited. And then after it was in the doorway to the living room, it disappeared after that. So other than that, the first floor was very quiet, like I had mentioned before. So now let's move on down to my favorite area, which is the basement. Once we got down into the basement, one of the very first things that I had noticed was that the ceiling was completely new, that it actually had a ceiling installed. Whereas before, you could just kind of see random floorboards or just kind of like the rafters throughout there. It now had a complete ceiling, which was brand new compared to before. But other than that, it was pretty much the same space. But I bring this up because one of the very first things that we experienced in the basement, especially around Mary, were cold breezes in cold spots around us. And so I was initially standing by Mary, and I felt the exact same thing pretty much almost simultaneously when she did. And so it would feel almost as if like there was a very gentle draft coming from a window or maybe like a door left open. But we checked all of the possible areas around us, like there is a window down there, but putting your hand up to it, you cannot detect any sort of draft or any sort of air coming through there. And then also, especially with the new ceiling, it definitely closed off any potentials for any holes that were in the ceiling as well, or that were coming from in between the floors there. And so we felt all around for all sorts of different possibilities of where this air might be coming from, and we could not identify the source. And most of the time, it would just kind of hover around like your shoulders and gently flow around your neck, because you could actually feel a movement to it. And sometimes it would come down near your hand and go lower to your legs. But Nancy had a thermal device, and she was actually able to see this cold spot as it kind of moved around us, as there were very discernible areas that were colder than the surrounding atmosphere. And of course, while in the basement, we had to use the flux responder, which was the device that we had such good luck with before on the full moon stormy night that I had mentioned before, and that we also feature in season one's finale. And while it did give us some hits, I would not really say that it was as on point as it has been before. There were times when we'd be talking and it randomly would go off, or it would go off maybe after a minute or so we had asked a question, but it didn't have the exact same responsive timing that it had last year when we were there back in November. But lastly, one of the devices that surprised me the most while we were in the basement was the ghost box. Now, when we used this last season at the house, we had one single word come through in all the time that we used it. So one single hit, and that was pretty much it. But this time, we really weren't having much luck at all the first few sessions that we used it. And then our very last session, when we were back down in the basement, we had the ghost box playing. And at this point, I kind of got into what I consider to be like the static haze. And if you've used a ghost box before, it rapidly scans radio stations to give you white noise. And then supposedly spirits can use that white noise energy to talk to you live. And you don't need a recorder to hear them or like go back and listen like I do with the EVPs. You actually can hear those voices coming through in a live kind of like live stream or live moment for you. And so that way you can facilitate communication on the spot instead of having to wait, go back, listen, and then not really realize that there was something around you at the time. So in this session, we're using the ghost box. And like I said, I kind of got into that static haze of where it's almost kind of hypnotizing in a way because it's so rhythmic. And we weren't having anything come through. And as I kind of lost focus, all of a sudden, it sounded like a woman's voice said a few words. Now, it all kind of caught us off guard, but we all heard it and it kind of snapped us out. Now, none of us could kind of identify what exactly was said, but we know for sure that there was a voice that came through. Now, I did record this with my digital voice recorder. The only downside to it was that I had left my recorder on the steps, and so I was not holding it near the device, so it did not pick up as clearly as it possibly could have. So lesson learned. Always got to remember those little things too, that when you set stuff down, it might not record as clearly. So just always a good reminder, if you do your own ghost hunting, be wary of those things, especially like with audio, visual, anything that you want to be wary of how you are capturing them, because it does make a difference. So for this clip, I'm just going to play the initial audio unadjusted or unenhanced, and then I have a few enhanced versions. So here we go with just the initial audio clip as is.
That was something. That was something.
And so, as you can hear, before my excitement in the clip, that it sounds like a woman's voice. To me, almost kind of sounds like she's saying two or three words, but I'm kind of leaning towards two. And this is just total speculation on my end, as of course, keep in mind, our minds want to try to make sense of this. But it almost kind of sounds like good morning, or it could be like two words with three syllables. But I'm not quite sure. So here is another way of hearing that. Again, it's going to play twice. This is just with the volume enhanced on the ghost box. All right, so once more, that was just the volume basically turned up or enhanced on the ghost box as we're trying to focus on that mystery voice. But now this last time, I tried to strip away some of the static noises and see what we could get, and also enhance that for volume, and this is what we got. So on that one, unfortunately, I think with stripping the static, it also takes away a little bit of whatever that voice is itself, but it is definitely an interesting way to look at it as well. So if you hear anything, or if you can identify anything, please, by all means, reach out and let me know what you hear, because really, I have no idea on this. And I think the unfortunate part is that I did not have my recorder right up to the device to fully get it. So lesson learned, but that is the way things go sometimes. So once again, if you have any opinion on what is being said, I would love to hear your thoughts on that. And you can always reach out to me on the socials or email bellinghamghosttours@gmail.com. All right, and that is going to bring us to the end of our first episode for season two. I thank you very much for being here as always, and maybe you're new, maybe you're not. But regardless, I'm excited for what's to come and see what we find. And I have dreams already, of course, for even possible seasons 3 and 4. But, you know, plans change, and that's sometimes just out of your control. I had all sorts of dreams for season 2 on what I wanted to do, but of course, things fall through, you don't find evidence in places, and that's just how life goes. And so for the next two episodes, I do know that I am going to focus one more on Whidbey Island, and then two about some hikes that I went on. I went on a little haunted road trip this summer to see what I could find. So that's going to be our next two episodes. And just like last year, I am going to have a Halloween bonus as well. So as always, thank you so much for joining me today. I really appreciate you being here. And of course, as always, I appreciate you staying open. So thank you so much for being here. And as always, stay curious, my friends. Until next time.